You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks. Welcome to the show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous, gorgeous planet. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. I think you'll be delighted as well. Now, if you are new, you don't know, but you need to know, we have a free weekly newsletter. It's called the K-Files E-Zine. And the K-Files e-zine is so simple to subscribe to. It's free, so there's no reason not to subscribe, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. So you just go over to kevinsmithshow.com and click the K-Files e-zine button that you will see. You can't miss it. It's big red letters. When the screen first opens, you'll see it. Or if you're listening via our player, there's a button on the player, and all you have to do is click that button that says K-Files and subscribe. It's really, really simple, all right? So if you haven't done it, be sure you do that. Interesting things happen every day around this planet. And it really boggles the mind once you find out some of the interesting things that are going on. And then you read your local newspaper or you watch your television news or listen to it on the radio. It really boggles the mind. You wonder, what is the matter with the American media? Having said that, I have listeners in the UK that make the same kinds of complaints about media there. And I have listeners in Canada that complain about the same sorts of things there, and Australia, and all around the world. And you really wonder what's up with that. Well, there are people that say there is some worldwide conspiracy to control the news. I don't know about that. That would be pretty awesome indeed if it could be done. And maybe it can. I don't know. But I do know that there are a few places where you can get information and then decide for yourself what you think about it. And this is one of those places. Now, I think it's important that I point out to you that I do not say that this show is a standard for truth and justice, and, you know, that's not the deal. The deal is that we bring people on the show and let them tell their story and present their information, and we give you the opportunity to talk to them and ask them questions. And I encourage you to do that. When we open the telephone lines later in the show, I encourage you to call in and ask your questions. Now, I've gotten several emails where people say, you know, I tried and tried, and I just couldn't get in. There were so many people calling in. I understand. I know how that is, okay? But If you keep hitting the redial button, you will eventually get in. And we would be delighted to hear your comments and to hear your questions and to have our guest answer the questions. Our guest is Robert Morningstar. He's been with us before, and he's back with some updates. We'll be back. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Did you know The Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcasts right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith Shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. My guest this evening has been with us before, and it's always a privilege and a pleasure to have him with us, Robert Morningstar. Robert, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Before we get into the stuff that we're going to talk about tonight, I do want to make a point of giving you the opportunity to tell us your website.
Of course, www.ufodigest.com.
All right. A lot of folks in this audience already are familiar with UFO Digest, but if you haven't, folks, if you haven't been over there, go and look. There is a wealth of information there and lots of interesting stuff. All right, now, Robert, when you were on last time, we talked about this event that at that point, we were saying an alleged meeting at the United Nations.
Right.
At this point, I'm calling it a reported meeting rather than alleged. I think we've moved beyond alleged. I'll state why, and then I want you to, we'll dive into your information about what's going on. The reason I don't call it alleged now is because it appears, and I will stress the word appears in all fairness, it appears that the agenda that was reported to have been discussed at this meeting has begun to be implemented. It appears that it's already underway.
Thank you very much.
So if the agenda that was discussed is underway, then we can safely deduce it was discussed. If it was discussed, we can safely deduce there was a meeting. So let's dive into your information. There have been some more developments and some movement, I understand, on this issue.
Well, I'd like to say that as incredible as it sounded when we released the information shortly after the February 12th meeting, Dr. Michael Sala and I, it was really looked upon with a lot of scorn by ufologists, but what we reported has indeed begun to unfold. Just to recap, the meeting was to determine how to go about a safe process of disclosure. And the sticking points that occurred at those meetings were primarily dealing with religion and sociology. How would different societies react to revelation of the existence of extraterrestrial beings, and more so, contact with them? And then the third element was economic factors of how the world economy would react to these events or this disclosure. So as hard as it was to believe at the time, we stuck with the story and told it as we were informed. And I can say that in just 3 months, we have seen a staggering amount of progress. Just to recap, the British MOD, Ministry of Defense, sex files have been released. A French admiral and six well-known French scientists from prestigious engineering, medical, and space organizations signed an open letter to the President of France, Nicolas Sarkozy, asking for a serious, independent study of the UFO phenomenon to determine its intentions and the prospective sociological impact that it would have. By the way, I took that letter and I sent it to the Pope. I told that in opinion that I would send it to Benedict XVI, whose email I happen to have. So I sent it, and I was shocked, you know, shortly after I was on the show with Jesse Randolph on UFOnaut Radio discussing the same topic. 2 days later, comes out that it's all right to believe in extraterrestrial beings, because, in fact, when you look at the symbology or the dogma of the Catholic Church, what are angels and devils, you know, other than extraterrestrial beings, you know, just another term from another time, perhaps when humankind was not a bit more naive in its language and symbol structure. And the...
Or maybe it is we who are naive in our definitions of those ancient words.
Correct. Angel means only messenger in the ancient
Greek. That's
right. You know, and then we've loaded it with a lot of other meanings and images. Angelos simply means a messenger.
That's right.
Right, and we find these messengers throughout the Bible. And significantly, I didn't speak about this before on the previous show, but it is clear that the Qumran community, the Dead Sea Scrolls, describes angels coming and going on what they described as chariots of glory in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And it's a very, very interesting passage. chapter in the Dead Sea Scroll describing the residency of they had a special tent for the angels in the center of the Qumran camp. And very strict hygienic laws for dealing with interactions with these angels, including hygiene and cleaning one's flesh and skin and bathing ritually if one had physical contact with them. So these were actually very tangible beings. And according to the Dead Sea Scrolls, it says they came and went on chariots of glory. So it's a very, very old relationship, let's call that.
Well, and sometimes people, they use these words, very, very religious people use words all the time. They never really stop to think about what that really is. But there are two races of extraterrestrials specifically named, and perhaps more than two, but for sure two, specifically named, and the Bible, one of them is cherubim, and the other is seraphim.
Exactly. These are very, very powerful cosmic beings when you read. They also figure very powerfully, strongly in the mystical system of Judaism and the Kabbalah, because Kabbalah is actually a mystical method of communication to try to get in touch with seraphim, cherubim, higher level orders of angelology. That's what it's called. The study of angels is called angelology. So again, it's what we're seeing is the metamorphosis of our myths and symbol structures and converging now in the 21st century with the jargon of technocracy. So while it's looked down upon to be religious or spiritual and believe in angels and demons, it's a little more acceptable in a modern setting, modern world, to talk in terms of extraterrestrials or cybernetic organisms, just a choice of words and vocabularies.
Yeah.
But I'd like to say this about, just to continue on this unfolding story about the UN and its activities. Shortly after, about a month after the, I guess we call it a leak, the leak of the story, the United Nations had some meetings and designated 2009 as the International Year of Astronomy. So this gives me a hint of a possible way that they've devised to bring the reality of extraterrestrial existence and UFOs into the public mind. And the way I see it, the way everybody would come out smelling like a rose, you know, after all these stinky years of 60 years of lying, is the United Nations is organizes this International Year of Astronomy, and some observatory, perhaps in Australia, looking into the southern hemisphere, or some other prestigious observatory, Jodrell Bank, for example, all of a sudden picks up a fleet of something, an unknown object, still months and months away. And slowly over a period of time, as this is a speculation, of course, of how it could be done or would be done or might be done, who knows, as I see it, it would approach Earth and come closer and closer to a point where the resolution of the telescopes, or perhaps it turned Hubble on it if it's still operating. And then they'd say all of a sudden, oh, it's a fleet of UFOs, you know, big news, you know, first time. And in a way, the excitement of this would kind of lull the public into thinking this is really it, the new thing, you know, it never happened before. And they would probably try to slant it that way, that everything prior to this was simply speculation and, you know, theory, but that this was the real deal.
Yeah, but now, also in fairness, you and I both know that a whole lot of the stuff that's out there in the world of ufology is speculation and theory, but there's a lot of it that's not. But and there's a lot of speculation and theory, and then there's a lot of horse manure.
It certainly is, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all been burned by hoaxes.
Mm-hmm.
I despise hoaxers. you know, the damage they do to the field, the embarrassment they cause to the people who fall for them. So I was very cautious and circumspect about this whole thing, and it was only my meeting with the source and the integrity of the source, his credentials, that convinced me that this was a serious issue and that it should be pursued. And in the aftermath of it, you know, I reflected upon it and said to myself, well, you know, the cat is out of the bag, and whether this thing did happen or did not happen, it should happen, and we should push, all of us should push together and make this happen. Why? Because the precedent was already set, and the scene was already set back in 1978. As Alfred Lambermont Weber and Michael Sala can tell you, the push was on in 78, and primarily through the work of Prime Minister Eric Gehry of Grenada, who had a close encounter of his own and brought the subject to the table of the United Nations and had meetings there that resulted in the passage of UN General Assembly Decision 33426, calling upon the serious study, bringing to the attention of the Secretary General the need for serious study and consideration of UFOs, and some very two mysterious points regarding arranging for the testimony of Sir Eric Gehry to be presented to the Committee for Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. Now, this resolution was passed, and it requested that all the nations of the United Nations bring to the attention of the Secretary General UFO events in their nations, and that a database start to be developed to understand this and to really take it seriously. If you go to UFODigest.com and type in Prime Minister or Sir Eric, E-R-I-C, Gehry, G-A-I-R-Y, or the word Grenada, you'll get an article that was written by Wes Bateman, who knew Sir Eric, and tells the story of how Sir Eric Gehry, around 1976 or 77, as Prime Minister of Grenada, was advised that some fishermen had found something that had washed up on the shore. And this was nothing less than the body of an extraterrestrial of rather large stature, six fingers, apparently doing some diving on a famous reef off Grenada, and carrying a container with samples of some very, very exotic fish. So I recommend this story to everyone. I edited it and illustrated it with appropriate photographs. And it explains also in kind of explicit terms how geopolitics plays into things, or UFOs plays into geopolitics, I should say, because it's also related to the real reasons for invading Grenada. So I recommend that article to you all. And I'd like to honor the memory of Sir Eric Gehry, who was courageous enough to stand for this in the United Nations and get a hearing and a committee going, and chaired it, and had a successful resolution passed, which has never been implemented.
And what happened to him following all of that?
Well, he was later deposed, and then Maurice Bishop replaced him, and then communist insurgency apparently overthrew Bishop. But people wonder whether that was a contrived rebellion to give excuse for coming in and invading Grenada during the Reagan era. And the whole thing about the hostages in the medical school, the hostages who claimed they weren't hostages and some claimed they were, and the request to free them, that's a whole can of worms there that you can understand better if you read the article on UFO Digest. And the reason the medical school is important is because when this specimen was found by the fisherman and Sir Eric Gehry came upon it, he ordered it to be taken to the medical school, where it was apparently preserved. So that may be one of the reasons for the SWAT teams and the
You know, this is the first time I've heard that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a fascinating story. It came out about, I guess, 2004, 2005, I read it.
Well, I knew the part of the story about his going before the United Nations and pushing for, you know, the enactment of this resolution, and I knew all that.
Yeah.
But I didn't know this about the body of an alien.
Yeah, this is the motivation behind it. He was stunned by what...
Well, I'm rather stunned just to hear it.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
This is a part of the story that a personal friend of Sir Eric Gary, Wes Bateman, and he tells this whole story, how he met him, how he went to the islands, and how he wandered into this, you know, nice hotel, and Sir Eric Gary, it's kind of like Casablanca in a way, you know,
yeah.
Rick? You know, he would conduct his government business in the evenings over dinner, and people would go and meet with him there, and that's how Mr. Bateman got to know him and told the story. Well, that's the motivation. That's what prompted Sir Eric Gary to bring it to the United Nations and succeed in passing a decision that has not been implemented. Well, the result of this second UN meeting that we discussed was to fire up this movement, and Mr. Lambremont Weber and Michael Sala have revived it, and I'm very very gratified by that. And this is one of the consequences of the leaking of the story. I'd like to thank a lot of the people who supported. At least they weren't scornful. They may have been skeptical, but they were civil. And there's a group of people who took it very seriously at the Open Minds Forum, which had a Skype cast with Clay Pickering. And as you know, Kevin, I've recommended Clay and Sean to your show now, and I hope to hear them, because they're a big part of the story.
We are, by the way, in touch with each other.
Great,
yeah.
Great. I think you'll have a great time with them.
And for our audience, Clay and Sean Pickering are the two guys that first had the information, and directly from the source that was leaking the information, and apparently was leaking it in compliance with orders to do so.
Exactly.
And so these are the two gentlemen who first had the information, and it went from them, I think, to, I don't know if it went first to you or to Michael Sala, but anyway, to Michael Sala published the
right. Both
information.
Both of us got it at the same time, and I saw Michael's report, and I said he did a wonderful job, and I sat back. We published it on UFO Digest, and he had it on Exopolitics, and it started to make the rounds. But then when the attacks on Michael came out and I knew that, you know, the story was legit, I wrote the Briefing Hoagland and put my imprimatur on it. I attested to the fact that I had met with the source, that I was satisfied with his integrity first, his credentials as well, and that we should lend weight to the whole event and take a wait and see attitude over it. But I
think, you know, as you know,
the religion part is the big part, and the Catholic Church now coming out and validating that if extraterrestrials exist, they are part of God's creation. And I like the way they worded it. To say that extraterrestrials don't exist is to try to set a human limit on God's creation. The other thing were some interesting theological concepts that deal with dogma. Hypothesizing the Fuentes, the astronomer of the Vatican astronomer, made the statement, the alien is my brother, and that perhaps these beings are a little more advanced than we are because they had not suffered original sin. See, they're not descendants of the fallen Adam. And so they stand apart from this whole tragedy.
Hate to do it, but we have to. Break is taking over. Folks, we'll be back more with Robert Morningstar right after this break.
Crystal vision. She stands before me breathing, but for now I'm only dreaming. When the right one comes along, when the right one comes along, when the right one comes along, when the right one comes along.
Back, and we're talking with Robert Morningstar, and we're talking about this. We were saying alleged United Nations meeting, I really should say it this way: it was a meeting at the United Nations. It was not a meeting of the United Nations. So, and there's a difference. It was not a General Assembly meeting.
Correct.
Okay. But it is reported to have taken place at the United Nations building, and that there were representatives of several countries there, about 30 or 40, and that, if I remember correctly, the Vatican had a representative there as well.
That was one of the reported presences at the meeting. That came from a source in France who's suffered a lot of stigmatization as a result of his revealing what he knew. You know, this is Gilles Laurent. However, the story that Clay, Sean, and I, and Michael Sala are offering to the public and channeling from the source is independent of the events that Gilles Laurent was describing, which he describes as follow-up meetings of the 13th and 14th. In regard to current follow-up meetings, they have continued, they have intensified. Working committees of attachés are meeting in different locations, including the United Nations, but around in other sites, to work out we're in the next phase of the program. As I mentioned and emphasized, the religious issue was one of the most heated issues that almost bogged down the meeting, the first one on February 12th. And it seems that that was given the priority, it would seem to me, in what has transpired. Not only has the Pope spoken out on it, but appears that in Eastern countries, Eastern Europe and in Russia, there have also been there's also been activity on the religious issue, in that it was reported in UFO updates that Jews and Muslims, Russian Jews and Muslims, also acknowledged that extraterrestrials could exist, but the Russian Orthodox Church rejected the notion that extraterrestrials, that it's all right to believe in extraterrestrials. So that's the one of the big problems, that it seems to be getting diffused. I mean, when the Catholic Church, which has about a billion followers, close to it, says it's okay to think about extraterrestrials as part of God's creation, that's a rather big chunk of humanity.
It is,
put at
and,
ease, you know?
I'll tell you something else. They put to rest some of their history. In that statement from Fuentes, or
Fuentes.
Well, F-U-N-E-S is the way he spells it. I guess it's
Funes.
Funes, yeah. But in his statement, and this is my paraphrase of it. This is not a quote, but my paraphrase of it. He says, and by the way, you know that Galileo thing? That's ancient history. Don't worry about that. It's not going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think the church has really took a lot of heat for that. Not only that, Giordano Bruno and a whole list of other people who were, you know, 100 years, 200 years ahead of their time. But that's, you know, in a way, what the church did then is what the media does now in trying to debunk people, ridicule them, destroy them professionally. In reality, the things have not changed. Anytime that there's a power group or an institution that has established itself, it is very reluctant to change the paradigm which conferred upon it its power.
Well, naturally.
And look at what happened with, for example, NBC Dateline last week. You know, the network NBC,
mm-hmm.
which they say nobody cares. NBC stands for nobody cares, because Dateline, they did a bang-up job of describing the best cases, and then they cut their own legs off by having the funniest debunkers of all time, James Oberg, Michael Shermer, and this Robert Schaefer. And at the end, when they come to the pinnacle, the best UFO sighting of all time, Phoenix, and they have the governor of Arizona and all the people describing how the thing was so huge it blocked out the sky. Somebody said that if you opened up a newspaper in front of yourself, you know, both sides, it was bigger than the coverage of a full-size newspaper. And they come out with the flare story, and they mock it at the end. But the thing seems to have backfired, because in the poll that they gave, you know, they gave their website, so if you go, you got two other sightings that they didn't cover on the show. That was the tease. But the vote was very interesting. When the last time I checked, It was 63% of Americans, or people who answered the poll, said yes, they do believe in extraterrestrials and flying saucers, and that they've been here and were being visited. And 12% said no, and maybes were 25. So I wrote a piece, I put out a notice on the internet that, you know, the poll shows we've become the majority, 63%. And my very astute friend, Captain Robert Collins, who is the author of Exempt from Disclosure, wrote back, hey, you know, when you add the maybes and the yeses, you know, 25% and 63%, that comes to 88% of the people, of the American public, if the poll reflects the American public. So that is significant. And, you know,
well, it is. And
if we had said 88% in January, that would have been an exaggeration, I think.
You know, 70. I think it was when you were with me, but I know for sure that I have said this. Mm-hmm. And I think it was when you were with me before, and we were talking about the media. I said, they're killing themselves. They're running in headlong into oblivion, and the numbers show that. I mean,
sure,
you know, and part of it is because they're ridiculing the very public they're trying to win over, with the majority of the public already saying, look, there's too much evidence here, and, you know, it's real.
Agreed.
And then by ridiculing it, they're ridiculing the very people they want to be customers.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why that the ending of that NBC Dateline made no sense to me. It was really kind of foolish, you know? And I thought the cases were great, you know, the Trent photo, the Gulf Breeze photo, the Australian experience with the cameraman back in 78. And I wrote to Dr. Bruce McAbee about it and said, oh, well, you were great on that show, you know. And what an honor to be involved in 3 of the 10 top cases in UFO history. And he wrote back, it was 5 of the top cases. I said, oops, I meant 5. Now, he's a great man. I respect and admire Dr. McAbee very much for his work. I have some really great old UFO documentaries, and I have to hand it to him. He really he was a great Navy man, and I congratulate him on his retirement, and I look forward to his continued work in ufology.
He's been kind of an amazing figure because he was making some pretty bold statements, even you know, in the early days, and he was still, you know, a Navy man.
Exactly, and you know, I have to say we owe this initiative to the Navy. The Navy has never denied the existence of UFOs, and as we discussed on the last program, there were two admirals, Admiral Sidney Soares and Admiral Helen Cotter, who worked with Donald Kehoe to keep the issue in the public eye despite the U.S. Air Force denials throughout the 50s. To refresh your listeners' memories, I have an article on UFO Digest called the UFO Smokescreen, and you can watch the interview between Mike Wallace and Donald Kehoe in March of 1958, or was it 56, that in which Wallace denied the existence of 4 documents which Major Kehoe was asserting existed and quoting. And then you see him denying it and saying the Air Force told us these things do not exist. And he's quoting from one of the very documents that he's saying didn't exist. And in the many years since then, every one of the documents that Major Kehoe was discussing have come to light. So this was part of the UFO smokescreen. And it was quite literal because Mike Wallace was smoking on screen and promoting cigarettes as a way of life. So,
as a matter of fact, if I remember, and I could, this could be very wrong, but I think he used to promote Chesterfield cigarettes.
I didn't want to mention a brand, but it wasn't that one.
Okay.
So I don't want to give anybody.
There was one of the newsmen that used to promote those. Yeah. I was thinking that was Wallace.
Yeah, well, the cigarette industry was a huge sponsor to many programs in that era, and you know, they were all, oh, my doctor recommends Chesterfield.
Yeah. Vapor vitamins. We have to take a break, and we will be back. More on this meeting and subsequent meetings and what's happening now in this UN UFO disclosure thing. We'll be back.
Es mejor no llorar y callar mi dolor. He cerrado mi corazón en un grito ilógico de profundos sentimientos que se enredan en tu piel. Me convertí en roca. No hay brillo en mi sueño. Me convertí en roca. No hay brillo en mis sueños. Es mejor no mirar. Es mejor ignorar. Es mejor no vivir, que seguir sin final. Me he negado a sentir la ternura del amor, a las noches estrelladas que me daban tu calor. Me convertí en roca, me brilló en mis sueños. No quiero amar, tengo miedo a sentir. No quiero llorar, ni quiero sufrir. No quiero amar, tengo miedo a sentir. Me convertí en
get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com. We are back. We're talking with Robert Morningstar, and we're talking about this... Well, it really began back in the 70s, but then was revived February the 12th in what we were reporting as an alleged meeting. It now seems quite certain that it took place, and I'm calling it a reported meeting. And there have been some, you mentioned, Robert, that there have been some follow-on meetings.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
Well, they've again, the planning is going on for resolving the stumbling blocks, which I said are basically religious, sociological, and economic. And the economic issues deal with what is going to replace the energy system of the Earth today based on oil. The problem is that the oil standard is really the foundation of world economy and world currency. We used to be on the gold standard, and we kicked that out the door. And slowly but surely, since the 1970s, petrodollars have become the standard. And this is a very difficult issue. It's very complex to discuss. But I can just say this to really put it in a nutshell. The United States economy is based on oil to survive because of the deal that was made with OPEC and the Saudi Arabian countries in the 1972 oil embargo that happened, the Nixon era.
Uh-huh.
Where they had us, you know, we were really in bad shape because of the Vietnam War had cost us so much. We had no more cash reserves, and all this cash was floating around in the rest of the world, and we were afraid that, you know, these countries were going to, you know, put it back, give us back the paper dollars and ask for what really backed it, you know, whatever the resources we had. So Nixon cut a deal with the Arabian countries, the OPEC countries, that yes, they could raise the price of oil, but oil had to be paid with American dollars. So all the countries of the world had to hoard American dollars in order to be able to buy oil. Brilliant, brilliant stroke of genius on the part of Nixon, a man whom I did not admire very much, but that particular deal really saved the United States. But now we have to go into transition into another form of energy, and this is going to be the transformation of world economy from an oil standard to something else, which I hope will be Tesla-based technologies.
Now, that's an interesting note about what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying, yes, now we have to go into, you know, a transition, we have to transition into something other than oil.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't remember the date, but within the last 2 weeks, I saw and heard President Bush make a similar statement. It was on television, and he said, yes, we are in a beginning to transition, but, you know, we still have to have oil while we transition. And not much was made of that he wasn't asked a lot of questions by the media about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fabulous statement.
Yeah. The other thing is, you know, Americans, we don't consider the big picture. And here's the big picture. The last time, it was many, many years ago, but when I recall that, you know, one out of every 10 jobs in the United States is related to the automobile, you know, either using it to do your job or the gasoline, the maintenance, the insurance, the adjusters who come and check out the fender bender, so on and so forth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance being one of them. The repair business, mechanics are dependent on it. State inspections, all of these jobs are dependent on this little beastie that we love so much. I love my cars, you know. I'm a Firebird man.
Mm-hmm.
I love my cars. And I tell you, I love it. And I've had I had a 68 HO, and I had an 82 L4, which is a very economical Firebird. And I have a beautiful 96. I love it. I mean, it's old. It's 12 years old, but to me, the 96 was the peak of the design of the Firebird. But we all love our cars. That's an American trait. And we haven't devised a way of transitioning away from gasoline and oil, propelled diesel, propelled cars. Except the hybrids are coming along, and I was remarking today how amazing it must feel to go from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds in one of those electric hybrids because of the torque of an electric engine or electric motor. So there's other things. There are hydrogen diffusion, separating hydrogen and oxygen to create fuel. So this is now being allowed to move. People were doing these things, I remember in the 1950s, my uncle talking about somebody who had developed an engine that ran on water, and that the American oil companies, the man was Mexican, and the oil companies came in and bought his patent, paid him off, and that invention never saw sunlight. So that's what's been happening. You know, new energy technologies have been squelched, and because of the greed, basically, the monopoly of oil and gasoline-powered motors. So we have to go back to start tinkering in the garage and coming up with things. My personal thing is magnetic motors, and I've been working on one for several years, which is a self-propelled magnetic motor.
So, I know someone else that's working on one.
Yeah.
So, you know, this whole thing about transitioning, I mean, that's a big chore, a huge chore.
Yes.
And, you know, I take a little flack sometimes from people that want everything to happen right now, because I say you can't do it quickly. If you do, you'll kill the economy throughout the whole world.
Right.
You can't do it overnight, but it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that, I think we need to give credit where credit is due and at least back off a little bit and give them room to work. People that have been elected and then also people who are industry leaders have to manage the transition in a way that we don't all lose our jobs and go hungry. You know, it's a big job, a huge job. By the way, and we'll get back to UFOs here in just a second, I did a show about 2 or 3 years ago where I reported on a car that's being made in France that runs entirely on compressed air.
Yes, I saw that. Very impressive invention.
It is indeed.
But already they've started to create blocks for its importation into the United States, you know?
Well, yeah, of course.
Reading, you know? But,
yeah, but it's nonetheless, it's out there.
Yeah.
And if we can't get it, there are people who can, and that makes a difference.
Yeah.
We're
a nation of great creativity. You know, it's a shame that it seems to me in the last 25 years that a lot of the nation has been dumbed down, and like that creative spark has been to some degree stifled. If only, you know what, things like the stories about the patent office. That if you try to patent a device, which is, let's call it a ZPE, zero-point energy device, or greater-than-unity device, they'll shoot you down and say, not literally, but they'll shoot your patent down by calling it a perpetual motion machine, and perpetual motion machines can't exist, so you can't have a patent. And the patent process is so expensive, and you have to get involved in with lawyers and the patent office and submitting over and over, and if they do accept it, the other part is this, that if they do accept your zero-point energy device, they might classify it under national security and forbid you from producing it. So there are a lot of catch-22s that are built into this.
A whole bunch of catch-22s.
Yeah, it's like a minefield. Like Newman's motor. They also say, well, we reserve the right. We want an example of your motor, And we reserve the right to take it apart and destroy it to find out how it works.
All right, we're into a break. We'll be back on the other side of this break. We'll open up the telephone lines for you. And you can call in with your questions or your comments. Fascinating stuff about disclosure, is it not? We shall return.
Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and we're talking this evening with Robert Morningstar. You're familiar with him from UFO Digest. And, Robert, let's go straight to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Atlanta.
Hi, Trey.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Morningstar, for coming on the show tonight.
It's my pleasure, sir.
I want to mention a couple things, Kevin, and then I want to talk about something that you mentioned, Mr. Morningstar, that rang a bell. Last night, Kevin, your guest mentioned the tone, and I rewatched the William Henry DVD, and one of the... the translations of the stuff is it shows the gods traveling using a tone to travel from here to there. So that was something that clicked. And also, now you mentioned earlier, I believe it was the angels of glory. Is that right?
I was talking about the chariots of glory that are described in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Okay, that's the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now,
right.
Now you and Kevin know a lot about the Bible, and maybe y'all can help me this. Do you all think that's the same thing as, doesn't it say that God descending from the heavens and his chariot of fire, followed by his clouds of glory, which I always assumed was his fleet.
Right. That's right. That's the clouds of glory passage, and I believe that both St. Paul and the Revelations describe the return of the second coming of Christ in terms of coming on the clouds and clouds of glory.
Yeah, and how often have we seen any UFO documentary movie in which we'll have, you know, show a rolling cloud with all kind of colors behind it? We've seen that in several.
You're right. The symbolism, especially what comes to mind, of course, is Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
That's right. One more question I'll get off and let someone else call. In all your research and studies, have you come across any information about the gods' battles? Or the wars of the gods.
Yes. I was talking to Kevin earlier about what a marvelous show he had with Joseph Farrell and how frustrated I was trying to call in because they were discussing so many marvelous things about the cosmic war, some of which involved, signs of nuclear Holocaust around Pakistan, the Mahabharata describing wars and the destructions of cities by what we would call missiles and thermonuclear devices. And what I brought to Kevin's attention during our phone call was that earlier than Homer, there was another, I guess we would call them bards, because they didn't write their histories, they memorized them, but in Greece, Hesiod's Theogony, which is the birth of the gods, the Greek gods, the Olympians, and the story of how they came to be the ruling gods of the universe, is a fascinating story of the battle against the Titans. So the Olympians battled the Titans, and in the final confrontation, Zeus, later known as Jupiter by the Romans, brings out the lightning and the thunderbolts. And you will never read a more clear and precise description of thermonuclear holocaust than in the final battle between Zeus and the Titans. And it's the description of the cloud, the mushroom cloud, the flash of light, the destruction of all life in the area. And add to that, he even says Hesiod, this is 500 years before Christ. Hesiod says that no one could walk into that region without becoming sick and ill and dying from some unseen pestilence. So this is clear. Another element is the relationship which Dr. Farrell or Mr. Farrell discussed was the relationship of the god of war, Mars, to all of this, and the destruction of the planet that existed between Jupiter and Mars and has become the asteroid belt. In ancient Sumeria, they called that planet Marduk. So Marduk was destroyed in this battle, a cosmic battle. And it's my belief that Mars, the planet Mars, and what I believe as an antecedent civilization on Mars, was engaged in the cosmic war, and Mars was destroyed by asteroid impact. But what I saw of Mars in 2003, at the closest point of Mars' approach to Earth in 60,000 years, just shocked me. And I realized that all those things that we see on the Discovery Channel and the History Channel are bogus. They call them computer enhancements, but they're really enhanced. They're really not even real photos of Mars. They have shallowed out some of the impact craters. They have removed this brilliant air glow of the atmosphere and actual weather on Mars. You know, one of the things that bugs me about NASA's information about Mars is that it's just patent nonsense. And they tell you that Mars has a very, very thin atmosphere and that very, very low air pressure. And yet, at other times, they tell us that the entire Martian planet is engulfed in sandstorms. And then they look at...
well, what about 1999? There was a cyclone near the North Pole,
the eye of which was the size of Texas.
Right. And the other thing is then they describe landforms that have been eroded, and it describes winds of 200 miles an hour. So you tell me how a very, very thin atmosphere with the molecules very far apart could be accelerated to 200 miles an hour, in, you know, like a sandpaper scouring that you would get. And so there's a lot of bogus information coming out. You know, 10 years ago, water was impossible on Mars. It never had happened. Richard Hoagland was saying, you know, there's water on Mars. Look at this and look at that. And they were all debunking him. And now, all of a sudden, these millions of hematite balls that they found in Meridione Planum, the Mars berries, as they call them, are all over the place. And hematite precipitates in water, and it's huge quantities of water. And I'm talking, imagine coming up to a crater that looks like it's covered with a billion ball bearings. This is how much hematite they found on
Mars. Oh, yeah, there used to be gigantic oceans on Mars. Let's go back to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Doug in Canada. How are you?
Hello, Doug. How are you?
Great, thanks. Robert, nice to have you on again.
Thank you, sir.
You say you have some updates on the UFO disclosure meeting at the UN.
Yes.
I'd like to hear some more, perhaps, on that. I'm at your website looking at the various things you have there, both in regards to the Vatican as well. Mm-hmm. Is there any developments at all with regards to the Vatican's disclosure?
Oh, of course. While I'm on it, let me keep pitching some of these wonderful articles that I worked on for the last 2 years, and that they're on UFO Digest. A year ago, a little bit more, it was Christmas time, New Year's time of 2006 and 7, I translated an article from Italian into English called The Omega Secret. And this is by Cristoforo Barbato, an Italian reporter who had a very detailed interview with a Jesuit.
By the way, I have a link to that article on my website.
Oh, great. I really enjoyed doing that one. That is really basically what I consider the best chronicle or short history of the involvement of the Catholic Church in the UFO issue from the very beginning. You see, religion has always been recognized to be one of the stabilizing forces in society. And in post-World War II, United States and the world, a very, very powerful spiritual force that was being utilized in the rebuilding of a totally devastated world. So this Roswell thing happens, and all of a sudden there's a new factor in the equation, you know, these creatures. And how is that going to affect religion? So Cardinal McIntyre, who was the Bishop of Los Angeles, being the closest to the Southwest, was the one that was designated to go down there and see, along with Cardinal Spellman, the two of them were very deeply involved in all of this. And they created a relationship, established a liaison with the United States government, the United States Air Force, and have always been part of the worldwide UFO network or intelligence network. The Catholic Church has, because of its resources and its widespread offices, has basically the one of the largest UFO observation networks in the world, where parishioners can report to their priests their experiences, whether they be sightings of luminous objects or interactions with intruders, whom they may take to be angels or demons, you know, in talking in terms of the abduction phenomenon. And all of this information is fed back through the chain of command of the Catholic Church, from the parish to the diocese, and so on back to the papacy. So their intelligence on the activity of the extraterrestrial presence is really widespread. So the Omega Secret by Cristoforo Barbato tells this long history of the Catholic Church's involvement in control of UFO information and an integral player in the UFO scene around the world. So check out the Omega Secret on UFO Digest to get more information on that. Current events, he asked about current events. I just want to say that the working groups are working. They are working in and out of New York City, and they are hammering out new policies, contingency plans, and trying to put their minds to the resolving the problems of economics in post-disclosure world affairs.
All right.
Thank you for your question, by the way.
Yes, excellent question. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, yes, this is Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, Kevin. What's on your mind?
Well, I heard you guys talking about the transitions earlier, about transitioning from one form of energy to another. Do you feel that all of this talk about the UN meeting on UFOs, which in earlier days probably wouldn't have gotten to the public wouldn't have known about it, and the public does know about it, about the Vatican coming out saying to about that it's not against God, the belief of God, that extraterrestrials exist, to all the UFO sightings we're seeing, and a lot of the documents being, you know, declassified, do you think that this may be a way to transition the people to accepting the fact that UFOs exist, so that when, let's say, a flying saucer does plop down on the White House lawn, that people aren't going to freak out about it? Could this all possibly be a way to transition people into believing that, yes, they do exist, and so that people will not panic?
Well, no. I'll tell you why. The poll that Robert mentioned before tells you the people are already there.
Yeah, they're already.
This is a way to transition leaders to admitting the truth.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to get to that, too, also, for leaders not to come out with the truth and stop lying and covering up everything, too.
Now, well, Robert, you may disagree with what I said. I think it
I'd
is.
I'd like to for a second.
Yeah.
I'd like to for a second. Yeah. I would like to say that the most important thing here is to not just preserve public order, but public sanity. And the best way to preserve that and to alleviate any fears or anxieties is to prepare the public psychologically. And that's what I've said is my goal, is to prepare the public psychologically and emotionally to integrate this experience or this disclosure in a way that will be positive and not threatening. Fear is something that works against the success of any venture, and strengthening the public psyche, the public mind, but simply by keeping it open, you see.
Yeah.
A closed mind will be more rattled by a disclosure than a person who is in the maybe category. The person in the maybe category, you know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, is a little bit readier to adjust mentally and psychologically to that. And people who say yes, people like myself, I believe that this is a fact, having had my own close encounters, both airborne and on the ground. So for me, it's not a question of faith or belief or maybe, you know. I saw what I saw. I know what I know. And as Mr. Callahan said, you know, James Callahan was number three man in the FAA, and he was down in that Washington conference, and he said, you know, rather sarcastic and still a bit upset at the way he had been treated, the FAA had been treated by the CIA, after the Alaska 747 jumbo jet encounter with the UFOs in Alaska back in the late 70s. He said, who are you going to believe, your government or your lying eyes? You know? It was like, well, man, I'll believe my lying eyes before I believe my lying government, you know, especially when it comes to this. And, you know, one of the things that really galls me is the attacks on human perceptions by people like Robert Schaefer, and, you know, the other skeptic bunkers, Shermer, they always say, oh, you know, you can't believe those two MPs who saw the UFO over Malmstrom Air Force Base when they shut down all those missiles. You know, the missiles were shut down, the targeting was reset. That was a really
big deal, you know, that had to be kept secret. But now we know through the work of Robert Hastings, who concentrates on UFOs over military bases, that these UFOs were not just disabling the missiles, they were resetting the targets. Now imagine what that tells every government if they're doing it to us, the Russians and the English. They buzz over the nuclear depot, and they go, whoop, and zap it with a light. And first the missile goes offline, and then they go and check the missiles, and they find, holy mackerel, they retargeted them to hit someplace else. So if we fire a missile, and the UFO has a capacity to retarget the site, you might fire a missile at Russia. And they're basically telling you this. If you fire a missile at Russia, you don't be surprised if it lands in Omaha. You know?
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Oh, this is Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah, Chris.
How's it going, gentlemen?
Good.
I just wanted to ask Dr. Mr. Morningstar there real quick what he thought about the Phoenix lander touching down on Sunday. I know they're supposed to be broadcasting it live, but do you think there's going to be any kind of slant or the delay, or how do you think they're going to...
Well, I hope it goes through, because... my name is on the CD-ROM. A friend of mine, Nick Belaskis, who teaches in York University. And I want to commend all the Canadian ufologists, since you've just called. And, you know, I've been a little remiss in thanking all the Canadians who do such fantastic work in keeping the public abreast to events. Canada is a hotbed of UFO activity. When you imagine a country as vast as Canada and with such sparse population, the opportunities for UFOs to operate up there are quite incredible. And I commend the tenacity of UFO ufologists from Canada for staying on the subject. Among them, Don Ledger, who is astute enough to have noticed that the Stephenville lights, the Stephenville UFOs, were just 60 miles from President Bush's ranch, you know? And I calculated that at 3,000 miles an hour, it would take maybe 70 seconds to get over there. So it is very significant. And there are many others. I would like to remind people about UFO BC, British Columbia, and the late Graham Conway, who was instrumental in bringing me into the public with the articles that Graham Conway and Martin Jasek and others associated with UFOBC published. I came upon their site, and there was one article in particular about abductions and children involved in abductions that touched me very deeply, and I said to myself, you know, this enough is enough, and I better start putting out what I know and commenting on this. So, Canada's great, and I thank also Chris Iverson and Jake Reason at OMF for their support and their curiosity, keeping the debate alive about the United Nations meeting. We're all working together toward the same goal, which is hopefully to get to the truth. And someone asked me on another radio program, what is my goal and why am I involved in this? I'm involved in this because I see that the current paradigm, the mental, the mindset of world leaders has led us toward the brink of self-destruction. And I think that mankind's consciousness needs to be elevated to a higher level. And I believe that the UFO issue and disclosure is something that could raise mankind's consciousness and make us feel more of our humanity and less of our aggression, our animality. So that's one of my goals.
All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Dick from Lebanon, Indiana.
Yes, Dick.
Hello, Robert.
Hello, Dick.
Hello, Robert.
Thank you very much for the package.
Thank you. I'm glad you received it.
Yes.
I just have one statement for the listeners out there. You're listening to a true gentleman out here tonight that does speak the truth, and that's a really refreshing idea. And thank you for all you do, Robert.
Thank you. Two of us, Kevin also. You know, we're all in this together, as I said. And, you know, I would like to just, since you're thanking me, I'd like to thank more of the people who are involved in this. I networked, you know, for the last 2 days to try to get word to have more people come in and listen to Kevin's show, which I think is an exemplary UFO show. And there's a group called the Tap 10 Group, which deals with zero-point energy and alternative energy inventions, and there's a gentleman named Victor Martinez who has one of the most illustrious email lists on the internet, the who's who of ufology. And I would just like to say Victor Martinez is the mighty marvelous mammon of ufology, and I thank him for putting the notice of our interview tonight on his stream. So, and I think it's important to keep up debate. It's important to express your opinions. It's important to back them up. And if your opinions are right and backed up by facts, your opinions will be accepted. And if your opinions are not backed up by facts or disinformation, they will fall by the wayside. But it's important for all of us to express our views. One of my groups is called the Freedom of Speech, a free speech group. And our motto is freedom of speech, use it or lose it. And I want to encourage people to express themselves and hold on to that freedom. You're
Thanks
entitled
for all
to your
you
opinion.
Do, Robert. It's great.
Thank you.
It's
Thank
great.
You, Dick.
Thanks, Kevin.
You bet. Thanks for the call. All right. We've got about 3 minutes before break. So those of you trying to get in on the phone lines, we've got time for one call here before break. Now's your chance. All right, 1-800-289-1092. I received a flash message wondering why I have not turned the Skype line on tonight. You may remember that we said we were testing it, and we ran into some technical difficulties with it, as you are aware. Those of you who listened to the last couple of nights, we got to work those out. We will, and once we do, it'll be back up, all right? All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Kevin from Corpus Christi.
Yes, Kevin.
How you doing, sir?
I am doing very well.
Am I live?
You are live. You're on the air and the world is listening.
I can't tell you how nervous I am right now.
Why are you embarrassed?
Well, I'm not either. I was trying to pretend.
Oh, okay.
Well, I've got a few things to say here.
You may have to hang on through the break because we're coming up on it, but go ahead.
I've got the ability to do that tonight.
All right. Go ahead.
Hey, first of all, has Dick from Lebanon ever produced anything?
What do you mean produced?
Well, I mean, calls in, you know, Kevin and I have, you, have a, I've called in and been listening for a few years, and one of my best character traits is the ability to speak freely and call BSBS.
Okay.
But what is, you know, I was listening tonight that Dick from Lebanon was very critical of Mr. What's his name? Help me out here.
I'm not sure who you're talking about.
The ET guy.
Are you talking about Dan Burrish?
Dan Burrish, thank you. Thanks
mm-hmm.
for helping out. Hey, and look, I'm all about show me something. And I hear Dick calling all the time, and hey, I want Dick to be the guy. I want him to be, you know, I want it to be true. Has he shown us anything?
Well, I'm not sure. Honestly, Kevin, I'm not sure what your question is.
Well, the question is, well, he's talking about all these documents he's going to get and all this proof he has, and he's part of this organization and all that kind of stuff. And what do we know? I'm speaking for all the, you know, people in Corpus Christi. what do we know here?
I mean, you want to hang on through the break? It's about to take over.
Okay.
Yeah, if you'll hang on through the break. Yeah, just...
Hang on.
All right, now you won't hear anything. You'll be on hold, all right? but don't hang up.
Better hear it.
All right. Okay, that's Kevin and in Corpus Christi, and he's exercising freedom of speech, and he's asking a question. We're going to try and answer it. All right, we'll be back right after this break. Don't go away. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking with Robert Morningstar. And on our audience line, we've got a caller. The caller is Kevin from Corpus Christi. Kevin, are you still with us?
Still with you.
All right.
Hi, now, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing well.
Good. I can answer, partially I can answer your question about Dick producing anything. I know that Dick produced videotapes since the 1990s, and I just received a package in the mail today with about six DVDs of information that that Dick has had, including some photographs related to extraterrestrials. I think that you could find out more if you go to IPUS.com, IPUS.com, I believe is...
it's IPUS Network.
IPUS Network.com. So that's my answer to your question, if Dick of Lebanon has produced anything.
And,
do you have any other questions? I've got some curiosity about Corpus Christi myself.
Okay, go ahead.
I understand that there was some activity, UFO activity, in Corpus Christi as well as Stephenville, but that activity was not reported in the media, and everybody concentrated on Stephenville. I heard that the UFOs really crossed country, and that Corpus Christi and the northern sectors had some sightings. Do you know anything about that?
I have no, trust me. I'm a big believer in whatever's going on is going on. But same time, I'm a realist, and sometimes that bites me in the butt. Sometimes I need the facts, and I want Dick Criswell to be the guy. I want him to be the guy. But I need to see something.
Well, let me make a recommendation, okay? And this is the same recommendation I made for people who said similar things about Dan Burrish. And that is, if you have questions about Dick Criswell, go to his website, read his stuff. If you still have questions, send him an email and address your questions to him and see what he says.
Okay.
I personally take the direct approach, as you know. And if I want to know something, I ask, and I usually... I'm very open and direct about it, but I ask it directly to the person of whom I have a question, and I think it works.
Okay, well, that's fair.
Yeah.
Fair, but I don't believe that I should have to go look it up on a website.
Why not?
It should be because he's coming on your show every, week.
No, he's not on the show every week.
No, he calls in. And
okay.
Trust me, remember, you have to remember this. I want to be a Dick Criswell fan. I do.
Okay.
I want it to be real. I really do. But we have to have some evidence at some point. We can't keep having Dick Criswell calling the Kevin Smith show saying, hey, this came in, this is news, this is this and that.
Why not?
Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because...
You can do the same thing. If you have news...
That's my point.
You can do the same thing. You can call in and say, Kevin, man, listen, I saw this UFO right up over my house today, and here's what it looked like. I mean, it's open.
I know, but I want everything to be legit. And that, if you're going to make these claims, you got to make them kind of like Dick called Dan on the carpet.
Yeah.
I believe in that. Just call him on the carpet.
Well, let me just say a couple. Can I say something here?
Sure.
Mr. Criswell is actively investigating things in Indiana, and he reported some very interesting activity that involved a UFO that apparently came down in Indiana and resulted in a lot of helicopter and news activities and an ambulance coming and taking things away.
Well,
that's
actually,
the way we find out about incidences.
That actually happened in Alabama.
Alabama?
Yeah.
And he also sponsors investigations by other people who work with him, and one of the most significant ones, I think, was Eric Taylor's investigation of the Ricky Sorrells incident, which was on your show as well.
That's right.
So it's by individual effort and cooperation that things are happening. Because if you're expecting the news media, the networks and the cable stations to really cover such events, local events that are important. They're important to local people, and they're important to others of us who want to understand the overall pattern of what's going on. And what's going on is, I call it manifestation. The UFO is making itself plainly seen to a lot of different people in different parts of the country. And there has to be a reason for all of this happening. And I think that the pressure is on the governments, both from the people like ourselves who want to know the facts, and also from the extraterrestrial presence to stop lying to the people. So I'd like to reiterate what I was asked by the military liaison diplomat who leaked the story. The military wants to do the right thing, but they will not mutiny. They are bound by their oath to preserve and defend the Constitution. What they want is the public to put the pressure on the politicians to give them the orders to do the thing that they want to do, which they know is right, which is come clean with the American public. They do not like inheriting this position, because that's what it's done. The modern military officer and enlisted man has inherited a policy that is way outdated. The people on the outside are a lot smarter than they were back in the 40s. They're a lot more psychologically prepared by years and years and years of exposure to film, media, books, information. And the people are ready to take the bull by the horns and wrestle it and get it down and find out what's going on. But it's the cowardly politicians and bureaucrats who stand in the way and just are a bunch of yes-men to an old, outdated policy. So our military has been very embarrassed by the Stephenville sightings. They were forced to come out with, basically, it's a reflexive denial. First say nothing. Say, you know, nothing happened. We had no ships, no airplanes out there. And then 10 days later, he has to come out. Usually they grab a colonel, poor guy. The last job he'll probably do, losing all credibility before the American public. And he has to come, oh, we had 10 F-16s out that night, but I didn't know where I put them, or I wasn't advised. So what kind of confidence does that kind of behavior give the American public in not just the competence of the military, but in their honesty? And they don't like it. They just don't like it, and they want it changed, but they want it changed the right way, which is according to the law, which is the military does what the politicians order them to do. So they want us, the public, to put the pressure on our local politicians and tell them the jig is up. You know, we know what's going on. We know something's going on. We want to know the truth and let it all come out.
I want to thank Kevin for the call, and I want to reiterate something that I have said many times on this show, and that is I firmly believe in freedom of speech. And I appreciate Kevin's call because it points out for our audience, when I say I don't screen calls to make sure that they all go one way, I don't screen them at all. And whatever is on your mind, you certainly can call in and express your opinion. I believe in free discussion, and that's what it's all about. But I will say this, and I've made a point of this, and Robert, you know this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to defend the guest if what's being asked is about the information that the guest has presented. The guest has to present the information, then stand behind it.
Sure.
Dick Criswell knows that. Everybody that comes on the show knows that. The only time I would defend a guest is if it starts to get into personal things. You know, somebody says, oh, you're an idiot. Well, no, we're not doing that. That's not debate and discussion.
Right.
But Kevin didn't do that. He questioned credentials. Okay, that's fair if you have a question about it. And I recommend that you do a direct approach. I recommend that you contact Dick and ask him.
Mm-hmm.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Yeah, Bob.
Hey, I just wanted to say that with all that interesting information, I don't know whether to make heads or tails from it. I don't really exactly know 100% what's going on, but I wanted to thank everybody for putting themselves on the line to give us that free and cool info that we get every night.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I got to tell you, there are prices that get paid.
I appreciate it, Kevin. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I would like to just say, you know, Kevin and I do this work, and we really do it for people like you and people like the gentleman from Corpus Christi, because all of us are in a way isolated in the information we receive locally. And it's important to know that these things, when they do happen, they're not just local events. People are experiencing shared experiences, you know, from Maine to California to Texas to Montana.
I hate to do it, but we are into a break and our mics are going dead in a few seconds. Folks, we'll be back more with Robert Morningstar and your calls right after this.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back. We're talking with Robert Morningstar. Let me just point out something that I didn't point out earlier, and I needed to, and I should do so. I talked with you last night about clicking that banner on our website for Hopeful Hooves. Be sure you do that. Check that out. That is really a fine organization, and they rescue horses that otherwise would be destroyed, and they put them together with children who have various disabilities, and it's therapeutic for the children. It saves the horses. It's a great organization, and they really deserve for you to take a look at them. And so click that and take a look at their website, all right? Robert, by the way, folks, the phone line is open, and we have time for one or two more calls, so 1-800-289-1092. Robert, the thing that I said about the free flow of information is really not just talk. I don't think that we can make critical decisions and do critical thinking unless we hear what's on everybody's mind. You know, you got to hear it.
Sure.
and examine it from all different kinds of perspectives.
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Yes, Mark.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, how you doing? Nice to hear from Ohio.
Hey, thanks.
I have a lot of good friends in Ohio.
Oh, do you? That's fantastic.
In Dayton.
Oh, really, Dayton. Yeah. I'm not too far from there, but good. Anyway, I had one quick question, and I'll get off here. I think that the disclosure might go very gradually. For example, I believe that NASA might acknowledge microbial life on Mars first. What do you think of that?
I agree with you. I agree with you that that may be the one of the first steps, you know, to breaking the news to the public. You know, there's a website. I don't remember the name of the website, but if you type in Joseph Skipper, he does some very interesting work. His website's dedicated to Mars, and he scours the different Mars satellite photos, and he puts some really outstanding examples of very, very curious forms that we see on Mars that he's found, and he posts them. Put in Google Joseph Skipper, and I think you'll be very pleasantly surprised, as well as enterprisemission.com. Can I just say that I spoke to Richard Hoagland, I'm in email contact with Richard Hoagland every day, practically. We go back and forth. And I asked him for 2 cents of common sense. And he said to study the UFO incidents and don't take them all at face value, and to be particularly cautious about the political ramifications, the political motives behind UFOs, UFO events, and how they're being dealt with in the media. And basically, be circumspect and don't take everything at face value. Be a critical thinking American.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the
call. You're very welcome. And I'd just like to say again to my friends in Ohio, especially Captain Robert Collins and my friend Roy Schaefer, who's a very dedicated researcher in many fields of science, also in Dayton, and also Far Skies. I know quite a lot of people, and some of them are people who've seen UFOs, others research them, and others are abductees. And the abductee phenomenon is something that I'm very, very interested in and deeply involved in. I would like to say hello to Katharina Wilson, and she has a website, alienjigsaw.com, one word, alienjigsaw.com, and she's a very talented writer and author, and her book, I Remembered What I Was Supposed to Forget, is a very interesting account of her experiences with extraterrestrials. So I encourage everyone to read far and wide, collect as much information, test it, cross-correlate it, see if you can get independent confirmation of the information, and then you'll be building your own data bank and be a better informed individual.
All right, let's go back to the telephone line. This will be our last call this evening. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Okay, the caller's not there. Robert, the you know, the crucial thing in all of this, and you've heard me say it over and over and over and over, is not that people believe in UFOs, but that they think about them. And, you know, if it exists, I don't have to believe it. You know, I mean, if it's there, it's there. It's just like any other object. I'm looking at my telephone. I don't believe in my telephone. It's there. There it sits. And you're on it. And so, you know, with UFOs, we have the same situation. And that is either they exist or they don't. If they do, they do, period. Now, then that does raise a lot of questions, and it calls for a lot of critical thinking. And questions like, okay, if they exist, then who's driving them?
Who's driving them? Why are they here?
Yeah. Where did they come from? By the way, I have also made this statement before, and I stand by it. The federal government actually has officially admitted that they do exist. And the first time and the most prominent time is Project Blue Book.
Sure.
Because they stated that there were a certain number, a certain percentage, that they simply could not explain. All right, there you go. That is a UFO.
The interesting thing about Blue Book, it's so severely criticized all the time, you know, but people rarely take the time to go in there and read it. And I have to say, Ruppelt did a pretty good job. He was forced by policy to always leave a question mark over the case. You know, that was the Air Force policy. We can't admit it's true. We have to hedge. But Ruppelt did some very, very good reports. And one of my favorites, if I can just touch upon it, is this B-47, the Strato Fortress. Remember that swept-back jet bomber with three people in it and a glass canopy? There was a B-47 that was followed by a UFO, a red UFO, from Florida and across the Gulf all the way back, I believe it was to Oklahoma. And the UFO ran rings around it. The thing was doing close to 600 miles an hour. And this red UFO appeared on its wing and buzzed, followed it, tailed it 600 miles. It tailed it for 600 miles. And that's one of the best cases in the Blue Book files. Another one deals with a scoutmaster down in Florida with a bunch of Boy Scouts driving home after a Boy Scout meeting and seeing a UFO alight in the woods and thinking it was a plane crash. And the fellow went in there, and the poor guy got burned. The UFO came overhead. And as I warn people, do not go under UFOs because they're a lot of... there's a lot of radiation involved around these things. It's microwave radiation that can cook you, like the Cash Landrum victims, you know, Betty Cash, who just passed away earlier this year. You know, you hear the story about the poor lady who wanted to dry her poodle quickly and put
him in the microwave.
Right?
And,
Well, listen, you know, those things are very powerful. Radiating bodies, not just microwaves, heat. So this fellow got burned, and Ruppelt did an investigation. They went back into the woods.
We're out of time, Robert. I wish we had time.
But they found that the ground was fried.
The ground was fried?
The ground was fried. Everything, the microwaves had gone like an inch or two beneath the soil and damaged the roots of the plants.
Wow.
So
I want you to give us your web address again.
UFODigest.com, 3Ws.UFODigest.com. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk to all of you and your questions. And Kevin, I appreciate you too. You are one of a kind.
Well, I appreciate that. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment. All right, folks, Robert Morningstar, and that is it for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow.
So long, everybody.